My name is John Merchant. I am one of two members of the Finance Committee. Marty Pohl is the other. We are both here. I am going to call the special meeting of the Finance Committee for April 14th, 2022 to order. I have some business to do here with relating to the Zoom meeting that's in compliance with the state rule. I have to consider finding that as a result of the COVID-19 emergency, meeting in person would present an imminent risk to the health safety of attendees, and the meeting is authorized to be held by teleconference pursuant to government code 54953. And I also need concurrence from my colleague, Marty Pohl. Marty, do you concur?
Yes, I concur.
Okay, then we can move forward. The next item on the agenda is comments from the public. If you have something pressing to say at the moment, we could entertain that. However, what I'm planning to do is turn the meeting over to our general manager, Tom Hennig, who is going to introduce our consultant who will make the presentation. After that, we will give everyone who is here the opportunity to ask the questions that they want. Like Amelia said, we will try to do that in some kind of order. We have quite a few people on the meeting, which is great news. So is there anyone who needs to speak at the moment? If you do, would you please raise your hand and get acknowledged by Amelia?
No hands raised.
Okay, great. Thank you all. The next item is to discuss the results from the security opinion poll. This is pretty much a one item agenda. What I'm going to do now is turn this section over to Tom Hennig, the general manager, and he will introduce our consultant who will make the presentation. Tom?
Yes, thank you, John, and thank you for everybody. It's nice to see that we have quite a few of Rancho Marietans on the Zoom meeting today as we go and we discuss this extremely critical issue to the finances of the district and to the citizens who work, run Rancho Marietta and all the ratepayers and all the businesses. It's great to see so many people involved. This meeting is designed just to discuss the security opinion poll. Everybody online knows that this has been going on for some time. I want to start by saying, you know, as you see there, California special districts provide all sorts of services within the state, everything from funeral, from cemeteries to schools to libraries and water districts and sewer districts. But we're the only district who has salaried security staff out of about 3,000 or 4,000 special districts in California. And the uniqueness is part of what makes Rancho Marietta so special and such a great place to live. This security, the history of security was it used to be the responsibility of the RMA, and through some maneuvering in the 90s, it eventually ended up in the hands of the district. And as the district started working this, they passed Measure J in 1997 to help pay for security services. And Measure J literally says the district is to provide with the funding two gate officers and one patrol officer on a 24/7 basis. And over the years, over the past few years, as we run into funding issues and staffing issues, we have found that at times we aren't able to provide the 24-hour patrol officer, staffing shortages. And of course, through COVID, we ended up having quite a few of our staff have to take time off as they quarantined. But we've never lacked the 24 at each of the gates, the 24-hour support at each of the gates. Measure J, during the first few years, had the board determined that they needed to build a full amount over the first few years, they would have developed a surplus or an excess revenue. And so to begin with, they didn't charge the full amount. they were allowed to by the voters. And since then, over a few years, they realized that they weren't getting enough funds from the special tax, that they raised the special tax to the maximum amount can be increased every year, starting about, I don't have the chart in front of me, but about 15 years ago. And over the past few years, over the last 10 years, Measure J funding has not kept up at all with the cost of providing security. And there's a lot of reasons, but they're all the reasons we all know. Staffing costs go up, the price of gas goes up like crazy this last year, and providing benefits and providing quality equipment, everything's more expensive. And as the years go by, it's even the gap has grown so much that within a few years, the district won't have enough money to pay for security. Over the past few years, and go down to the second paragraph, next paragraph down, Amelia, in 2021, so last fiscal year, the district allocated 65% of property taxes to security. That number is going up. It'll probably be close to 80% for 2022-23. And at some point, we won't have enough property taxes, unless, of course, all the planned development happens, and then we'll have more funds, but it's still at some point we'll never catch up. So as a result of this, the district asked me to put out an RFP to select a vendor to do a security opinion poll to see what it was that the residents who paid the fees were open to doing in order to continue to have this high quality security in-house department that we have. And so we put out an RFP, and we hired Timothy McClarney's firm, True North Research, out of Southern California. And Timothy had some familiarity with Rancho Murrieta over the years, so he thought it would be a good fit. And I felt that he was a good fit too, as opposed to some other bidders to the project. And I don't want to spend too much time chit-chatting, but I do want to go down to the schedule that we have a little bit further. So the timeline has been, the budget approved for 21-22 included the funds to do the survey. We put out the RFP late in 20, and we awarded the, 21-22. In February of 21, we issued the contract to True North. We held a really nice town hall meeting. It was attended by about 75 people on June 22nd at the Country Club. And then Timothy came up again and held in-person stakeholder meetings at the district at various hours. And I think we had a really good cross-section of Rancho Murrieta at those meetings, which resulted in us building the questionnaire. And then we finalized the questionnaire in January, and Timothy mailed out 3,000 envelopes to registered voters only within the district on February 2nd. And he began doing his polling shortly after that. The polling results are here today, April 14th. And then if approved by the board or this committee to take it to the board, we can take it to the board as early as next Wednesday, which would be advisable to give us a chance to do a proper educational campaign and hopefully hit the November 8th ballot for the general election. One of the things I really need to point out is we're just doing our jobs. We as government officials, like the board members are, and government administrators like I am, we're not allowed to promote or demote the idea of raising this tax. We are responsible for providing facts, and we're responsible for answering questions. And so as part of this whole process, we are recommending, and Timothy can talk to this at some level if need be, we are recommending also that the district hire a firm named Clifford Moss. And the reason we want to hire Clifford Moss is they're a really good fit for the district. They came forward with a reasonable proposal, and we are recommending that the district choose them over. There's a couple other firms that do similar activities, and neither one of those firms was, one of them wouldn't respond because they're probably too busy. And the other one basically doesn't bid jobs anymore. They just say, here's how much you need to pay us. So Clifford Moss seemed to be a really good fit for the size of Rancho Murrieta. And that all being said, I would like to introduce Timothy. I don't have his bio. I probably should, but you've been doing this a long time.
Yeah, I can do a little brief overview.
Okay. And I just want to tell you, these are very difficult things to have happen. It's difficult to go through all this rigmarole and all these surveys and all these things that we're doing and then be unsuccessful. So we hired True North because we felt they would scientifically be able to make a recommendation to the district is what the next steps would be. So that being said, I'm going to turn it over to Timothy McClarney. And to reiterate what Amelia said, we're going to let Timothy go through his presentation without interrupting him with questions or chats. And then afterwards, we will be holding the questions and answers. And of course, everybody's limited to 3 minutes. And I've asked Amelia to make sure that she runs that clock nice and clean. You get a quick warning when your time is almost up. That being said, I'll go for it, Tim.
All right. Thanks, Tom. And before I jump in here, so I have a PowerPoint presentation that I was planning to walk through. Should I just share my screen? Is that the easiest way to do this? Because I have it loaded up on my side.
No, I believe Amelia has the PowerPoint, right, Amelia?
I'm seeing the questionnaire in front of us.
Questionnaire.
Right. This was the board packet. Amelia, the PowerPoint's in our SharePoint site.
I will let you share your screen. That's
the easiest way to pull it.
Okay. We'll do that.
By far. So I've stopped sharing and Timothy, I'm going.
How's that?
There it is. It's just like magic.
All right. Let me pull mine up. I got to get my, it looks like I can't see anybody else when I'm doing this. So I'm not going to be able to see anybody on your end. I can just see the screen that you're seeing. But right. I think that'll work. So as long as you can hear me, we should be good.
Yes.
So, first of all, I just want to say good evening to Chairman Merchant and Chairman Pohl. Thank you for the opportunity to present here tonight. A little bit of background since Tom didn't have my bio, that's okay, Tom. I suspect you don't walk around with that in your back pocket. But I'm Dr. Tim McClarney. I'm the president of True North Research. We are a firm that over the last 20 years has specialized in working with public agencies, so cities, counties, special jurisdictions, school districts, universities, et cetera, in using surveys to help them develop a statistically reliable understanding of the communities that they serve. To date, we've worked on over 1,200 research studies for public agencies, and about half of the work that we do these days is what we call revenue measure feasibility studies, like what we have done for the CSD, where the goal is to understand, is it feasible to move forward with some type of revenue measure to fund a public service or benefit? And by feasible, I mean, if the board were to choose to place this on upcoming ballot, does it have a reasonable chance of success? And when we do see that it's feasible, the second goal of the study is to understand how would you go about structuring a measure so that it's consistent with the type of measure that your community is interested in supporting, right? There's a lot of components to these ballot measures. There's, what are you going to spend the money on? How much is it going to cost? How long is it going to be in place? What sort of accountability provisions are built in? So all these important sort of decisions that you have to make along the path towards placing a measure on the ballot, the surveys can help guide. We've had a lot of success to date with our research. We've, based on the measures that we've recommended go to ballot, and we don't always recommend measures go to ballot, but based on the measures that we've recommended go to ballot, we've had 95% success over the last decade. And to date, we've helped raise about $34 billion statewide in voter approved measures. So I mention that because as we go through today's presentation, I might make reference to how, the results that we're seeing in your community compared to what we might normally see or in other communities that are considering measures. And I just wanted you to have a sense from the experience base from which I'd be speaking. This PowerPoint covers the highlights, and I welcome questions from the committee members as I go, or at the end, whichever is your preference. So with that, let me go ahead and jump in. Before we talk about the actual results, helpful to take a moment to talk about the methodology of the study or how we went about conducting the survey. This survey was conducted in February of this year, and we wound up speaking with a random sample of 673 voters within the district that are what we call likely November 2022 voters. These are voters who, based on their voting history, when they register, the types of elections that they participated in the past, as well as some of their other demographics, we expect are actually going to cast ballots in the November 2022 election. You have 3,981 of these individuals within your community, and we spoke with 673 of them. In terms of how we chose that sample, we use what's called a stratified and clustered random sampling. I can get into the details of that if you like, but suffice to say what that ensures us at the end of our survey is that our sample of 673 is a perfect reflection of that much larger, likely November 2022 universe on all the dimensions that we know are related to how voters tend to vote on tax measures. So things like age and gender, household party type, their own partisanship, these are all characteristics that tend to be related to how voters view tax measures and whether they tend to support them or not. And so we made sure that our sample matches that profile of the likely November universe in Rancho Murrieta. And that's one of the ways that allows these surveys to be so predictive, even in a day and age when not everybody answers their phone and not everyone's going to participate in the survey. In terms of the recruiting, we actually use a mixed method approach where we, you know, recruited by phone, text, email, and I should have put down there mail as well. So we gave those voters who were part of our study ample opportunity to participate in the study, because if we couldn't reach them by email, we tried by text. If we didn't reach them by text, we, you know, there's the phone, I mean, the mailed letter that went out. And we also did quite a few phone calls to try and make sure that those people in our sample had every opportunity to share their opinions. In terms of data collection, respondents had the option of taking the survey online at a password protected website or by phone. Every respondent had a unique link that was sent to them so that it ensured that only Rancho Murrieta likely November 2022 voters who were in our sample could participate in the survey. And once they completed that survey, that link would no longer work for anybody else. That way, everyone could only participate one time. Now, because this was a random sample of 673 likely November voters and not a census of all 3,981, it has what's known as a margin of error due to sampling. And in this case, that's 3.4%. What that means is we can be 95% confident that the results we'll talk about tonight are within 3.4% of what we would have found had we spoken with all of the likely November voters in your community. So with that, let's go ahead and jump into the results. This first slide shows the results of a few of the initial question in the survey where we asked individuals overall, how would they rate the quality of life in your community? Would you say it's excellent, good, fair, poor, or very poor? Nice little warm-up question for folks. But the one thing that is really striking from your results is that residents of Rancho Murrieta have a very high opinion of the quality of life in your community. This is, again, we do this type of work all around the state, and 97% excellent or good. I don't know that I have seen a number that high in the last few years. So clearly people value and move to Rancho Murrieta for a particular reason, and they value the quality of life that's in that community. Following that question, we asked individuals, if you could change one thing to make Rancho Murrieta a better place to live now and in the future, what change would you like to see? This question was administered in an open-ended manner. And what I mean by that is we asked the question and then we let them tell us in their own words the one thing that they would like to see change to make the community a better place to live. We didn't provide them with the list of responses you see there on the slide. We then went back and reviewed their verbatim responses to this question and then grouped them into the categories you see here. And so what you see is the top of the list, improving public safety, security, reducing crime. That was the number one topic overall. About one out of every four respondents hit on a public safety item, so 26%. You had about 20% who were interested in a new country club, community center, and pool. 9% mentioned limiting growth and development. and on down, as you can see here. So from there, after we had that open-ended question where they got to tell us, you know, what issue was most important to them, we also provided them with the list of issues you see here on this slide. And for each of these issues, we simply asked them to tell us, how important is this to you? Is it extremely important or very important, which are represented by the dark blue and medium blue bars there? Is it somewhat important, not at all important? That's represented by that white negative space off to the right. These are asked in a random order, but we have sorted them from high to low here based on that combined percentage of folks who said extremely or very important. And that combined percentage is shown in that box off to the right. And so what you see here is at the very top of the list, the most important issue overall was maintaining an ample supply of safe drinking water. You had 97% say that's either extremely or very important, followed by maintaining a low crime rate, protecting local property values, maintaining local streets and roads, then preventing trespassing the community and on down. One of the interesting things we like to look at is if you look at the items that would be addressed by your measure. So things like maintaining a low crime rate at 92%, preventing trespassing in the community at 84%. How do these issues stack up against that issue of preventing local tax increases, which you see at the very bottom there? It's kind of a rough rule of thumb, but the more they care about the issues that would be addressed by your measure relative to the issue of preventing local tax increases, right? The bigger the gap there in perceived importance, the more likely a measure is to be viable, right? If preventing local tax increases ranks higher up the list and is above, or at least even comparable to the types of improvements that you're talking about funding with your measure, that tends to suggest there's a lot of tension there and you're going to have a much steeper hill to climb to be successful. And so in this case, you do see we've got about a 32-point gap in importance between maintaining a low crime rate and preventing local tax increases. We have about a 24% gap between preventing trespassing in the community and preventing local tax increases. So that kind of makes sense when you see the rest of the slides in the survey, because it suggests that your residents care deeply about these issues and that they're somewhat open to the idea of a potential revenue measure to fund these issues. So speaking of that, right after that question, we get right to what we call the initial ballot test. And the idea behind the initial ballot test is we're going to present to respondents a mock-up of what we think that roughly 75-word ballot statement could look like on the ballot and get their reaction. It's a really good gauge of where your community is at on this proposal on the natural, because at this point, we haven't provided them with any additional information about the measure beyond what they would see in this mock ballot statement. So you can see in the ballot statement, one of the things that we're doing is we're testing a measure that would be a $298 per year parcel tax. It would raise about $800,000 annually for the services that are shown there in the bullets. All the money stays local, meaning that this is not money that can be taken away by the state or the county or used for other purposes. So that's the ballot language that we tested. And here are the results. So at that initial ballot test, there were 60% of our respondents who said that they would support this proposal. You had 31% who were opposed. You had about 9% who were unsure. So in the state of California, for a community services district to pass a measure like this, it's considered a special tax. It requires two-thirds yes vote support in order to be successful. And so at this initial ballot test, support for the measure at that $298 price tag is about 7 points lower than the two-thirds required for passage. What's interesting when you dig behind this number, and I don't have a slide on this, but when you look at it by across different subgroups, one of the most striking things about the support for this proposal is how even the support level is by partisanship. Normally, when we do these types of measures around the state, you're going to expect to see a gap in support between, say, Democrats and Republicans, right? Democrats tend to be the more tax-friendly group. Republicans tend to be the less tax-friendly group. And we will normally see that, you know, if you look at the support levels between Democrats and Republicans, you're going to get anywhere from at minimum a 20-point difference to, in some cases, I've seen as much as a 50-point difference between how Democrats and Republicans view a measure. In your measure, they were within 2 points of each other. So there is not a partisan sort of thread running through this that regardless of partisanship, you tend to view this measure the same. We did see that high propensity voters, voters who are, you know, for example, not only likely to cast a ballot in November, they're also the kind of voters that would cast a ballot in the lower turnout June primary. They tended to be a bit more supportive. Voters that are over the age of 30, right? So some of your older voters were more supportive, and female voters were a bit more supportive, but it was a fairly even pattern of support across subgroups for the most part. So from there, we get to the tax threshold question, and naturally support for a proposal can depend on the price tag. The higher the price tag, all other things being equal, the lower the level of support you can expect. And one of the goals of this survey was to make it really clear that, you know, this measure is a tax measure, right? And also to test, you know, how voter support for this proposal may vary depending on where that price tag is set. And so we tested four different tax rates in the survey. 298, which was in the ballot statement I read you earlier, is the top rate. We also tested 248, 198, and 96. And the nature of the question is, if you knew that your household would pay an additional X dollars per year, if this measure passes, would you vote yes or no on the measure? And the nature of this question is, we're kind of putting the blinders on a voter and we're focusing their attention on the dollars, right? The 75 word ballot statement is a mixture of what it's going to cost, but also what it's going to fund. It's kind of a package deal. Here, we're just focusing their attention on the price tag. So it tends to be a bit conservative read on, you know, at what level voters are interested in supporting your proposal. So when you put the blinders on them at 298, we had 56% of voters say they would support that. When you dropped it $50 to 248, it didn't change much. It was at 57%. When you get below 200 at that $198 per year threshold, we land at 62%. And then when it gets right below $100 at $96 per year, support jumps up to 73%. So this is an important slide because, you know, I think the viability of this measure will depend on the price tag, certainly. And this slide sort of is going to inform that decision and my recommendation a little later in this slideshow. Okay, so from there in the survey, we go right to what we call our services and improvements section. And the idea here is really twofold. One is we are now going to start to educate respondents more about what this measure can accomplish. In that initial ballot test, we only had 75 words to describe the measure. It's kind of limiting. And here we get to unpack your measure into a variety of different services and benefits of the proposal. And in that way, we're giving them a better idea about what this measure is about. The other thing it allows us to do is to understand, of all the things you could spend the money on, which of these rise to the top of the list in terms of voters' priorities, and which of these may be further down the list. So at the top of the list, you see that deterring major crimes, including burglary and theft. This was the item that had the most favorability. You had 92% of voters indicate that they would strongly or somewhat favor spending some of the money on that. Followed by continuing to provide security gate officers 24 hours a day, year round, to control community access, prevent trespassing, and then reducing vandalism, graffiti, and property damage, and then reducing trespassing by non-residents. So there's kind of a, visually, there's kind of a tier here. The top four you can see test, you know, stronger than the bottom four. But it's also worth noting that even the things on the bottom four, even the lowest rated item, which was enforcing RMA rules, you had 71% of voters say that they would favor spending some of the money on that item. So there's nothing on the list that is unpopular, so to speak. It's just that some things voters care more about than others. Okay, so if the board chooses to place a measure on an upcoming ballot, there's going to be an election cycle. And during that election cycle, there will be a lot of discussion and debate in your community about this proposal. You're going to have some folks who will step up and say, you know, this is something we really need, argue on behalf of the measure, talk to their neighbors and friends, and try and give them reasons for why they should vote yes. You might also have some opponents, right? People step up and say, this is a bad idea, we shouldn't be doing this, and here's why. For this survey to be a reliable gauge of the feasibility of this revenue measure, we need to understand not only where your voters today, right? We need to understand where they're likely to be at the end of an election cycle once they've been exposed to that discussion and debate on both sides of the issue. And so we do that in the space of the survey by presenting both positive and negative arguments. And here shown are the positive arguments, and the nature of the question is, supporters of the measure say blank, you insert a positive argument. Do you think this is a very convincing, somewhat convincing, or not at all convincing reason to support the measure? And you can see here that, you know, some of the positive arguments get traction. The number one being, you know, by keeping our community safe and secure, this measure will help protect our property values and keep Rancho Murrieta a special place to live. And the number two being, one of the main reasons people move to Rancho Murrieta is to be in a safe gated community with private security. And if we want to keep our community safe, we need to support this measure. So we convey a series of positive arguments, and you can see that a number of them get traction. So at this point now, voters have heard more about this proposal than they did at that initial ballot test. We had a chance to talk about the various tax rates that could be associated with the measure. That tends to be a bit of a wet blanket on support for a proposal because you're focusing on the price tag. But we had a chance to also come back, convey more information about the types of services that would be funded, as well as convey positive arguments. And so we circle back with what we call our interim ballot test, where we present to them that 75 words again, and we ask, now that you've heard more, where do you sit? And the answer to that question is shown here. At the interim ballot test, we have 58% support among our respondents for this proposal. So it's ticked down slightly. But keep in mind, again, that this is for a $298 measure, right? So we're testing the highest price tag here. What it kind of tells us is that, you know, although voters really like what they see in terms of the services that would be funded by this measure, that they do have some price tag sensitivity. And at $298, you're about 9 points short of where that two-thirds threshold is that would be required for passage. And then we get to the negatives. And the idea behind the negative arguments is we want to pressure test voter support for this proposal by sharing with them some of the opposition arguments that could pop up during the course of an election cycle. So we have a realistic understanding of how they might respond to those negative arguments and how it may ultimately shape their opinions about the proposal. And so you can see here the negative arguments that we tested, the number one being that property owners are already paying the district a lot of money for water, sewer, and security. The district has plenty of money. They just need to do a better job managing it, right? So that was the number one negative. The question, though, is what happens afterwards, right? After you expose respondents to these various negative arguments. And what you see here is it cools us down a little bit, but only by 2 points, right? So the opposition arguments didn't get a ton of traction. Sometimes we see negative arguments drop a measure by 10, 12 points. Here it drops just 2 points. And so, you know, fairly resilient support. But again, it's sitting at 56%. In order to be successful, the measure would have to get two-thirds. And again, that 56%, I think, is a direct reflection of the higher tax rate that is associated in the 75 words with the 298. So after the final ballot test, we also had a test where instead of 298, we asked, what if the tax rate were set at a lower amount, $171 per year? This is the amount needed to continue providing the current levels of security in the community and avoid having to make deep cuts to security patrols. So this is the dollar amount that would allow essentially the current levels of service to continue into the future, or at least the foreseeable future. And when we present it that way, what you see is that we had 56% of folks who were definitely or probably yes at the last ballot test when we were testing 298. So that's the white slice of the pie. And what we saw is that you had about 2% of voters who then jumped in and said, oh, I'm definitely in if it's at 171. You had another 8% who said, yeah, I'm probably in, probably yes, if it's at 171. And so you add all that up and you hit 66.4%. So sitting right around two-thirds at that lower dollar amount, but keeping in mind that they not only see the dollar amount, they also understand that that's the amount that is needed to keep this current service levels continuing into the future. Okay, so I'm gonna take a sidebar here for a second, which is in addition to having a series of questions about the potential security tax that we've been talking about, we also wanted to gather respondents' opinions about who should be providing the services. And so in this question, we informed voters that security services are provided directly by the Rancho Murrieta Community Services District, which is a public agency. Some have suggested that security should be outsourced to a private company. In general, which do you prefer, that security continue to be provided by the Community Services District or that it be outsourced to a private security company? So you can see, based on that question, just basic preference, would you prefer that it be outsourced to a private company or provided by the CSD? The majority of respondents, 56%, said, I would prefer it to continue to be provided by the district. You had 13% who preferred that it be outsourced to a private security company. And the remainder, 28% plus 3%, were either not sure or preferred not to answer. Now, following this question, we then added a wrinkle. We said, outsourcing to a private security company would result in an estimated savings of 20% in the cost of providing services. Knowing this, which do you prefer, that security continue to be provided by the Community Service District or that it be outsourced to a private security company? So here again, we introduce the notion that there's this 20% savings if we were to outsource to a private security company. That changes the dynamic a little bit, but you still see that the overall lean is towards continuing to have the security provided by the CSD, with 41% favoring that, 32% at this point prefer to outsource to a private security company, and then you have this chunk of about a quarter of folks who are either not sure or prefer not to answer the question. And then we took the opportunity to ask folks how safe they feel Rancho Murrieta is as a place to live. And would they say it's very safe, somewhat unsafe, or very unsafe? You had 98% of respondents say that the community is safe, at least somewhat. That's great. I don't know that I've ever seen a community that when you ask that question, the answers light up like yours and all green. So clearly residents, you know, feel comfortable about the safety in the community. But that said, we also went on and asked them, you know, when compared to 5 years ago, would you say Rancho Murrieta is safer today, about the same, or less safe? And you can see that almost 50% of folks feel that it's less safe today than it was 5 years ago. So although the community is generally safe, the trend is going downhill in terms of safety. And then we did ask individuals, what is the public safety issue or security problem that they most like to see addressed in the community? Here again, open-ended question. They got to tell us in their own words. And then we went back and reviewed those verbatim responses and grouped them into the categories you see here. And 22% mentioned something about gate access and security. 19% mentioned theft and vandalism. And then 12% mentioned the need to have 24/7 patrol and security presence. So those were the top issues. Okay, so what does all this mean? I'm going to circle back first to, I think, one of the main questions that motivates this type of research, which is asking the basic question of, does a measure appear to be feasible for November 2022? In other words, if the board were to choose to place a measure on the November 2022 ballot, does it have a reasonable chance of success? I think the answer to that is a qualified yes. Yes, if structured appropriately and combined with effective outreach and communications. So I'll unpack that here in a minute, but let me first say, why do I come to a yes conclusion here? Well, there's a number of positive signs in the community in the survey that sort of lead towards that. The first is that we saw voters rated improving safety and security and reducing crime as the most important issue facing the community, right? Far more important than that issue of preventing local tax increases. That translated into solid natural support for the proposal at that initial ballot test. Even at the high $298 per parcel rate, we found 60% of voters say that they would support that. All the services that the district's considering funding with this measure are popular. The positive arguments that we tested resonated. And so those things together tell us, okay, there can be a path forward provided that you structure this measure accordingly. However, the survey also presented some challenges, right, that pop out either from the survey itself or when you step back from the survey and you think about the election environment for November 2022, there's some challenges we need to keep in mind. One is tax rate sensitivity, right? At no point in the poll when we tested $298, does it hit two-thirds, right? And if you come up short of two-thirds, that's not a successful measure. And so tax rate sensitivity is something that really needs to play into, you know, do you move forward? And if you do move forward, at what price tag? Secondly, we saw that the negative arguments get some traction, not a lot, right? But a little. And so we need to be mindful of that. And then thirdly, there's all these unknowns outside the space of the poll, right? So where are we at in the trajectory of the pandemic, right? Are we going to get another surge, yes or no, and how that might change things? We have inflation running at about 8.5% currently. You know, what's going to happen to inflation in the next 5 months? It's unclear. And so that can create a potential challenge. And then, you know, international conflict with what's happening in Ukraine, you know, and where, how does that either resolve itself or become a deeper problem? You know, these are all things that are unknowns that can, you know, can impact the prospects for a local tax measure. And so with that in mind, I've got a couple sort of observations and recommendations to share. The first thing I want to kind of remind everybody is, you know, a poll like this is a snapshot in time, right? It is not a crystal ball looking forward to election day and saying on election day, I predict you're going to get this, right? Or you're going to get this. A poll tells you where you are today in terms of voters, you know, opinions about this measure. And it also, when structured appropriately, gives you a sense of how your voters are likely to react to information and events that could pop up during the course of an election cycle. So it's just really important to keep in mind that what happens on election day isn't dictated by what your poll says today. It's dictated by everything that happens from this point forward. And so with that in mind, it's kind of a reminder that we need to be making smart decisions about how you structure this measure so that it's consistent with the type of measure your community has said that you're interested in supporting. And it's also important that you put the work in to educate and inform voters about the decision that you're asking them to make. And so in terms of the smart decisions category, price tag is probably the item that's the most important in all of this, and it's gonna be important to keep it affordable, right? And this is always a risk reward proposition. The higher the price tag, the more revenue and more reward that the district has and can use those funds to improve the security in the community. But the higher the price tag, it also comes with a higher risk that on election day, you're not successful. We found in the poll that at $96, there's two-thirds support out in the community for that right now, right? That to, if the price tag were set at $96, the two-thirds support is there. We saw that, you know, it's maybe possible to go out with a measure that $171 and hit that two-thirds mark, but it's kind of conditioned on the fact that voters would understand that that $171 is what is needed to continue existing service levels in the future, right? They don't naturally understand that now. And so we hit two-thirds with 171, not just because of the price tag, but also because they had a certain understanding of what that dollar amount meant. So price tag is going to be a really important decision. Secondly, voters' priorities. It always makes sense that, you know, when you're putting a measure together like this, it should reflect how voters would like you to spend those funds. And what you see here is they were most interested in using the funds to help deter major crimes, provide 24-hour gated security, reduce vandalism, graffiti, and property damage, and also reduce trespassing, as well as reduce fire risk and provide security patrols. So those were the top-rated services that Rancho Murrieta voters would like to see reflected in this measure. And then in terms of district communications, Tom, you had mentioned at the outset that, you know, as a public agency, you are not allowed to advocate up or down on this measure. And that is true. What at the same time, though, I think it's really critical that the district take the time to educate and inform voters about the decision you're asking them to make. Right. So you can have a conversation. That's good local governance. Right. It's going out, engaging with the community, letting them understand what the facts are behind the current situation and what this measure would be about and would accomplish, right? You're not saying vote yes, vote no. You're simply giving voters the facts to come to their own conclusion about whether they want to vote yes or no on this proposal. And so district communications are going to be an important part of sort of expanding the conversation and building consensus around a proposal. That said, there's also an independent campaign that would be needed if this measure were to move forward and to be successful. Independent campaign means it's not funded by the district. It would have to be privately funded and organized, where individuals could step up and they could actually advocate to the community if that was their inclination as to why this measure is needed and sort of campaign on its behalf during the election cycle. The reason why this independent campaign becomes so important is, you know, during that roughly 88-day window of the election cycle, you know, there's going to be lots of discussion and debate, and that campaign is really needed to kind of help sort of keep the voice of the measure out there at a time when the district really needs to, as a public agency, can't do that. And there's also allow, you know, that campaign to sort of react to some of the potential, you know, challenges that can pop up during election cycles. So, you know, inflation, cross-cutting political winds, should you get opposition, all of those sorts of things. So with that, it's the end of my PowerPoint presentation. I will go ahead and stop sharing here at the moment. That way people, at least I can see people. And let me open it up to questions from the committee.
Tim, this is John. I'm at this point in time, you know, and we've been living with this for so long. I'll defer to Marty if he has questions. And beyond that, let's just get to the folks that are out there who have particular questions about what you just presented.
Sure.
Marty, anything at the moment?
I have just one question. You kind of noted that you had success in ballot measures in the past. Mm-hmm. The success, did it go along with a previous survey that said that you had the votes to make it happen?
Yeah, I mean, we generally don't recommend clients move forward with measures that the polling suggests aren't going to be successful.
Okay.
I mentioned price tag being one of these important considerations. You know, even though the need might be for, say, $300, sometimes mm-hmm. when you do these polls, you go out and you find that, you know, voters like what you're proposing to do, but, you know, their threshold is $150. And so, you know, my recommendation in those circumstances is for, in most cases, is, you know, to go ahead and right size the measure so that it's consistent with what your voters have told you they're willing to support, right? So, you know, there isn't any magic to having successful tax measures around the state. It's really about listening to your community, right? Listening to what their priorities are, listening to what their tax rate sensitivity is, and then building a measure that's consistent with what their interests are, right? So you're not putting something out there that they don't like and then trying to sell them on the idea of supporting it. You want to be putting something out there that matches what they've told you they want to see. That's how these measures pass.
Thank you. Well, and let's see if there's some people in the audience who want to comment.
So Amelia, do you want to take the hands in as best you can in order, or? And I'm gonna let you take it at this point.
Because nobody is raising their hand, I have to think that either I didn't do a good job explaining how to do it.
I have a question.
Oh, okay. So yes, let's just be polite and we'll take questions as people can because nobody's raising their hands. So who's that with a question?
Yes, I have a question.
And may I ask your name?
Sure.
Oh, Robin Raylan was able to raise her hand. Thank you. Go ahead. Who's first? Sir?
Ted, go ahead.
Okay. The problem I'm having, I don't seem to be able to see anything that indicates how I raise my hand. However, I can just go on from here if you'd like.
Please do. Yes. Thank you.
Okay. I have a question of Tim. And the question is section 10 under the privatizing security. Quote, outsourcing to a private security company would result in an estimated savings of 20%. Do you know what that savings of 20% would amount to in dollars?
So I'm going to actually pitch this back to Tom. When this topic first came up, we discussed it and I said, well, you need to get some quotes to figure out what sort of real savings we're looking at. I've worked with some other agencies where the thought was, oh, it's going to save this much. And then when they dug in and they looked at it, they realized the cost savings wasn't as much as they originally thought it might be. And so, Tom, you did some homework on this and that's how we came up with the 20%, correct?
Yeah, we at a previous job, we'd done an RFP to provide security services throughout, of course, the city of Stockton, where I'm from. And based upon my experience of working with the Stockton PD budget and bringing in the security firms and knowing what I know about Rancho Marietta, and, you know, we did have people apply when we did an RFP for security services, for, you know, on-call security services. I felt like 20% savings was a good guess. Ted and I disagree on that, and I'm okay with that. I think he believes we would save 50% or more, which is fair. I mean, we wouldn't know until we actually went out and did a formal bid. And a formal bid process is lengthy because security is complicated, and you really don't know how many people out there are gonna apply. When we did the previous bid package, we had nobody apply to begin with. And then we had two companies apply. When all was said and done, we ended up choosing ABA. It's interesting. I asked Amelia, the reason we're stopped on this screen here is that's what I asked, what page I asked Amelia to go to. But so 20% to me, I'm comfortable with 20%. I'm not comfortable with much more than that right off the top of my head until we actually put out a bid package.
Okay, and I appreciate all of that, Tom, but my question is directed to Tim, since this entire presentation has to do with a survey. And to Tim, I would say, would you be surprised to learn that it would be $500,000 per year every year using the current proposed budget of $2.5 million? Tim can reply or respond.
Well, I mean, again, I
okay. If you want to take John, if you want to take him out of the discussion, that's okay. I'll just go on. Since almost all of the ratepayers do not know what the 20% represents in dollars, and now that you know that it's 500,000, would you rephrase asking your question using 500,000 instead of 20%? Go ahead.
So most people, when you do these types of measures, Ted, you say $500,000. What does that mean? I mean, how does that, you have to sit there and go, okay, well, what is 500,000 of? I don't know. They don't know necessarily. Let me respond.
Okay.
You'd have to say, what is the annual budget? You'd have to say, okay. And then it's $500,000 to put it in some sort of context, right? To get an understanding of what that savings may be, right? And we see this all the time when we do polls where we say, oh, it's a $30 million bond or it's a $45 million bond. It's hard to understand the difference between those two. It all just sounds like a lot of money, right?
I disagree with you completely.
Okay.
Fair enough. That is, you ask how we get there? I just explained to you, $500,000 per year is 20% of the $2.5 million budget. It is a fixed number that you have put forth to the community, and CSD now owns it. And before releasing your survey questions, were you informed that there are two proposals from private security companies that would save approximately $1 million per year every year? Now, you can argue that, and that's fine. So the real estimated savings is somewhere between CSD's 500,000, that's your number, and the private security proposals of 1 million. So pick a number, 600,000, 700,000, 800,000. In my opinion, the survey asking if the ratepayers would support an increase of $298 or whatever per year in the face of a large six-figure savings is totally unacceptable. Thank you.
Thank you for your questions. And next I have Raylan Mobley. I hope I said it right. She was the first to raise her hand. You can unmute yourself by hovering over your name, and then you'll see some blue boxes.
Okay, can you hear me?
There you are, hi.
So I listened to some of the audio from the last meeting. I was unable to attend, and I was shocked when I learned about the research that Mr. Hart had done. And quite frankly, I am in support of private security. I don't think we can afford these type of increases you're talking about between the 298 or 278, in addition to what the CSD to get the reserves amped up, we're talking about almost $800 a year. I'm currently gathering per Prop 218, the people that are opposing this raise for the other. And I would be surprised after hearing from some of these elderly people, that they would support this. So I think private security is something that should be looked at. It was shocking to me to hear that Ted had presented this information to the board back in September. And here we are, you know, same place we were, now looking at how much, I don't know, how much 298 times how many rooftops are we talking, a couple million dollars more in taxes you want out of us? So, and then the reserves, if you had private security, the reserves that you've been using to prop up security wouldn't be needed anymore for saving $1 million. I understand we're like $4 million in the hole with unfunded liability for, I don't know, retirement or what have you. So that savings of $1 million could go to pay off the debt of this community. And I feel like it's the financial responsibility of our board to ensure they get us in better financial situation. That's about all I have.
Thank you for your comments. Next, I have Stephanie Bianchi with her hand raised. Whenever you're ready, Stephanie.
Thank you, Amelia. I appreciate that. One of my questions is just with kind of piggybacking on what Raylan was just asking was, in the course of all these questions, while I understand the focus was primarily on security, at any point in your survey, did you address the current Proposition 218 rate increases? At my understanding, annually that will raise residents within the district $528 annually. And with your tipping point for your research being around the $298 annually for residents, I'm just curious as to how that additional increase with the Proposition 218 as it's proposed currently will impact your proposal with just focusing on security when that comes 6 months later.
Well, so I'm going to jump in and answer that question. They're two entirely separate issues. The Prop 218 is representing for security a 2% increase in the Measure J tax. The Measure J tax is not on the table. It's a tax approved by the voters in 1997. It will remain in place in perpetuity, as far as I know. This is a new tax. This is a new special tax, again, focused entirely on security. And in this case, focused entirely on security patrol.
Sure. And I understand that fully. But I think the bottom line for residents is the total dollar amount that impacts residents, whether, you know, they're on fixed incomes or not, it's their pocketbook at the end of the day. So I understand how it differentiates between security and reserves or whatnot that the proposition's focused on. But at the end of the day, it's total dollars. So my question is, was that ever asked? Because I think it looks at the total dollar amount when the tipping point was 298 for the voters that were surveyed.
So the way what we tend to find in the STEM when we're doing these measures is, you know, and the way they will appear on the ballot is it's a single issue measure, right? So either voters have a chance to vote up or down on whatever this one proposal is that's put in front of them. I hear what you're saying, which is, look, there's a lot other, you know, funds that, you know, residents are paying, and there could be some increases in other ways coming down the line. And how might that sort of shape how voters view this proposal? The way we handle that in the space of the poll is when we're testing the negative arguments, we kind of prime them to be thinking about these things. So for the number one negative argument I mentioned over there earlier was property owners are already paying the district a lot of money for water, sewer, security. District has plenty of money. They just need to do a better job managing it, right? We also mentioned that this tax will last forever. There's no expiration date. We mentioned that the tax amount automatically would increase 3% a year. We talked about how residents and local business have been hit hard by the pandemic and are struggling to stay afloat. Now's not the time to be raising taxes. And we also had a negative argument about they should outsource to a private security company. We'd get more for our money, right? So we put all that out there to a respondent, and respondents have an idea of what they're already paying to the district, not just in security, but in other areas. And so that's how we get at that issue. We didn't specifically say, by the way, you're paying, you know, $80 for this and $95 for that. And by the way, that $95 for water is going to go up to this. We didn't get into that kind of a conversation.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for your comments. My next hand raised is Galaxy A13SG. Whenever you're ready.
Hi, this is Ann Goodwin. I'm a longtime resident, and I have a couple of questions, and this might be for Tom. If this passes at the 298 or even lower level, the 85% of the property taxes that they're spending on security, what would happen with that?
Those would go into reserves.
So they will go to reserves. Okay.
Well, the leftover funds at the end of each year, the leftover revenues.
Okay.
And I mean, for lack of a better term, that's what happens with that money.
If we pass this, will 85% of our taxes still go to security, property taxes?
So if this passes, whatever, if the board elects to move forward with it, a special tax measure, the funds received from that special tax measure would go towards security.
Mm-hmm.
That would offset the money that we're currently using from property taxes. The property tax funds would then go at the end of the day into reserve accounts.
Okay. So it could affect. Okay, perfect. I just have to say I'm totally against private security. My concern is the quality of workers you'll get in here, the consistency of workers you'd get in here, and I'm totally against private security. The other thing on the 218?
The Prop 218, yes.
The Prop 218, so that could have an effect on how much you need to assess us too, right? To increase our for reserves.
I'm going to jump in real quick. You're very familiar with Prop 13, correct? Way back.
Wait. 13 is the one you were discussing about. You sent out the. Not the property tax, keeping the value of the homes together, but this, what you said,
Prop 218. Yeah, Prop 218 is a measure that was passed by the state after a few years after Prop 13 passed. And it was a measure that restricts the district's ability to raise fees over the amount of the cost of service. So every year we have to issue a Prop 218 notice that tells the residents what they're going to need to pay to keep their water flowing, to keep the sewer working correctly. And in this case, also, we have to talk about the rates for solid waste or garbage. It doesn't require us. There's not a requirement in Prop 218 relative to security in Rancho Marietta, right. But we include that in that notice. So the right now there's a big jump being proposed in reserve contributions for water and sewer because our reserve accounts are so desperate for cash. They're very low. And right now, this is in large part why, because the property taxes that would normally go into reserves are not available because we spend them on security.
Yeah, that was my question. So there would be a significant amount possibly to go into or into the reserves from this, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. I had one more question, and that is, and I just lost it.
You know what? We're going to let you come back in if you want to.
Okay, bye. Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Amelia, I have just a quick comment there to add to what we said here. A couple of things going on, and you can hear me, right? Mm-hmm. Okay.
I can hear you.
Yes, I can.
One of Timothy's points in as it related to private security did show that there was an impact when the potential of private security was suggested. And what Ted is saying is that he has in hand some analysis from two proposals that he went out to get. And what I think is possible with that is that perhaps if we were to come up with a validated RFP, in other words, go out and get a private security quote, we have time that, and we may well wind up doing this, and Timothy hasn't addressed this point yet, we have the ability on a limited basis to focus in on specific questions and retest them. So if we had an RFP that Tom was comfortable with and perhaps Ted was comfortable with, and we were to test that question again and rephrase it, we might come to a more conclusive answer, because while Timothy's presentation suggested that there was movement in private security, as Anne suggested being her opinion, the survey also showed that there is in the community a very high regard for the security system we now use in terms of personnel. So we don't necessarily have to be done here with the analysis. Perhaps we can better satisfy everybody's concerns if we rethink how we revalidate the data, and that may be using some of what Ted has and what Tom would be able to collect, and then agreeing on that and testing it again with a more sophisticated set of questions that related specifically to private security. And again, that's just my opinion. And we're not yet at the point, at least somebody, Tim, correct me if I'm wrong, we're not yet at the point that I can't ask these kinds of questions, because once we roll into this, we're out of it. I mean, we can't say anything. So, you know, perhaps there's a way to get to that. The other comment I had was, just so everybody understands in what Tom and Ann were just talking about, is that for this year, we are fully funding security. And we are fully funding it by contributing the funds that we get from our property tax allocation, which have gone up, because every time they sell a house in Ranch Muirhead and the tax value goes up, we get a small amount more. So the question becomes not only, well, what do we do with the money if we fund it through this ballot? The question really becomes at the end of this, is if we don't do anything and ultimately we use 100% of the property tax allocation because we have no other choice, then what do we do then? Okay, so those are just comments that I have, and maybe we can look at a way to get a better answer on this question.
This is Anne again. I did, that sounds good. I did recall my other question. I know this is off base, and this is about the 218 again. I noticed that there was a management letter as part of your last audit, or our last audit of CSD, and it talked about the reserves. Do you think if we do not increase the reserves, you can get a pass an audit?
I'll answer that. I mean, some agencies have very little reserves and they pass their audit. The audit is designed to make sure we're spending money the correct way within the legal way we can spend money. They will give an opinion on how reserved an agency is. And if, like us with our aging infrastructure, if we had zero reserves, we'd have to really start working on getting bond measures to pay for the infrastructure that's breaking down because of age.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
John?
Oh, yes, Ted. Yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to respond. I agree with you completely in the sense of go out and get some hard bids from reputable, well-experienced private security company, and then you will know exactly what it boils down to. That's all I've been trying to do for 6 months.
So okay, well, if we're agreeing, Ted, then let's take some more questions. I think there may be a path to work on this. I don't know what the answer will come out to be, but at least we will perhaps be more satisfied with the answer.
Thank you.
Okay, you bet. Amelia, who we got? Anybody else?
Question comes from James Q. Public. Go ahead, Mr. Public.
Hey, I was surprised when I saw this survey and the way that the gate and staffing for the gate was put into the mix. My understanding is that absolutely no money from any proposed referendum would be applied to the gate or staffing for the gate. And because the gate is such a hot button issue or an important issue, that if the respondents to the survey were aware of that, that the results might have been quite a bit different. Do you have any input into that, Tim?
So my understanding of this is that depending on the levels of funding over time, as the other measure does not keep pace with the costs of providing security services and gate services, that at some point that, you know, you might actually not have 24-hour gated service, right? That this would need, that funds are needed to supplement that. And so that's what this measure, that's why that's part of this measure. Part of the funds could be used to, as, you know, security gate personnel, salaries increase, right? As the cost of providing those things increase and they outstrip the existing measure funds, that this measure is essentially backfilling that.
You know, I'm going to jump in really quick because I know Mr. Gere's question is where it's going. This is Tom Hennig, by the way. There's no monies from this measure, if passed, that are intended to be spent on staffing the gates. From our analysis and from the ability for us to not, you know, if we do have staffing problems, last year, I think we had about 100 hours worth of time where we had no patrol officers, because patrol officers, when there's no gate officers, work the gates. I cannot see that in my lifetime that Measure J would not be able to fund operating the two gates that we currently have. Now, if you add a third gate, it's a whole new story. When they start building up, and the Escuela gate might eventually need to be manned. And we've been looking at some passive, like video gate coverage too, for some of the late hours of the night when we have hardly any activity. But Richard, I said in the last board meeting, and I'm going to say it again, there's no intention whatsoever of spending the monies from this special tax on gate coverage.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Okay.
My question is that I'm concerned that the results of the survey would have been quite different, or possibly quite different, if that fact had been clearly stated up front and the respondents were aware of that.
Richard, this is John. That's absolutely true. If we told everybody who lived in the village that they were going to pay for the gates, you're absolutely right. Every one of them would vote against it. However, we don't tell them that. And we have never allocated our security fees that way. And you know that. That's not what happens here. That's not what the 218 notice reflects.
I don't think you understand my question, John. I'm talking about people behind the gate. The gate is important to them. And what's been presented to them is that this measure would be protecting their gate, supporting the gate. And that's absolutely not true. That whether this measure passes or fails, it has no impact on the gate.
I just made a point to you too that, you know, while we have fully funded it by using the property tax allocation once again this year, if we don't face the problem, eventually there won't be any more property tax allocation to allocate towards anything. So the real reason behind this is to fully fund security in accordance with the tax and not with the property tax rebate that we quite honestly desperately need to serve the entire community with infrastructure and reserves.
Can I ask you one question, John? Is any money?
3 minutes is up, Mr. Gears. Thank you so much for your comments. My next hand raised is from Frank's iPad. Frank, whenever you're ready, sir.
Oh, yeah. My name is Frank Pamilia. Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Say, I've lived here, as John knows, for a long, long time, and I've been in a lot of committees with him, and he knows that I know what I'm talking about. I have lived since I returned from Japan. I've lived in three communities that are very similar to Rancho Murrieta. I lived in a gated golf course community in Northbrook, Illinois. I lived in a gated golf course community in Danville, California, and I lived in Rancho Murrieta. The two previous ones had the kind of security Ted's talking about, and John is saying we should get a quote from. And I can assure you, I don't know the lady who was talking about, she's absolutely against private security. I don't know if she's ever lived in a place with private security, but it's as good or better than what we get here at the gate. Now, I don't know anything about them patrolling the back part, in police powers, but we don't get much out of that anyway. Anyway, I'm just asking John to proceed with an idea to at least get some information from these people along Ted's line, because I don't believe the 20% thing. It seems to me there's a lot of effort here to promote this thing, and the questions of the survey demonstrated that. I have one other question. The very first slide that Amelia put up there, it talked about the cost to run the survey. I don't know if you can put that back up again, but I would appreciate looking at it. But the bottom line was $90,000. And here you go. Okay, True North was $29,000. Estimated payment to the elections was $518,000. Clifford Moss. Who's Clifford Moss? Did we pay him $45,000?
Let me jump in really quick on that one. No, we haven't paid Clifford Moss anything, and we have not paid anything we paid a little bit in legal costs, but not anything to report. Clifford Moss has given us a bid of $35,000 to help support the educational and informational campaign that we need to do to
prepare. Oh, in other words, what you're talking about is you're spending $90,000 of our money to get this thing passed. And that's, I think that's terrible.
That's my answer, yes.
Yeah, I think that's terrible. Because Frank, why don't you just ask the questions and see what people here want, not what you want.
Frank, here's what I think when you say that we want it passed, I think that's that there's a part of that if we're going to go through the expense of putting something on the ballot.
Okay, yeah, I understood that
at all. Then the last thing that I want to do is spend a ton of money to put it on the ballot so somebody can say, well, I told you so. If Timothy's analysis in the end, when we're done with the research and we're done with working through the problems that we want to expose with the initial research, if we have an issue that we're confident or fairly confident will not pass, then my opinion would be we just don't put it on the ballot. I mean, why spend any more money once we know definitively that it is going to fail? Then that's where we stop.
Well, you've got the information.
Have another conversation.
You got the information from True North that $96 will pass, right? $296 won't pass. $170, whatever that was, is iffy, but $96 is going to pass.
That's so far, and like Timothy mentioned, a snapshot in time. At the moment, yes.
Okay, so if you want to put it on the ballot, why don't you put it on the ballot at a number that will pass, and you don't have to have Clifford Moss spend 30 to get additional polling to further sell it.
And I'm going to jump in really quick because on the screen you see I estimated $45,000 for Clifford Moss, and their bid was $35,000 to support us, but I made an estimate of $10,000 to run an additional poll, just like you're talking about, more closer to the, and I believe it's August 1st, yeah, so right there, the August 1st deadline for the district to say, okay, here's our $518. We want you to run, we're gonna run an election. And by then, by August 1st, we have to make a decision. And we have to produce that ballot message that says, should Rancho Marietta and taxpayers pay this much more money every year to support this level of security? So we have to really zero in on exactly how much money we think is going to pass and then put it out to the voters. And if it doesn't pass, and then we've spent the money and we didn't get what we want. And then we have to start, we go back and we figure out what the board wants. It's up to the board on what we do next. We just tell them where the money's at, and we let them know that here we are, this is where our reserves are at, this is where our cash is at, and since this didn't pass, we have to determine that, tell us, okay, make security live within its means. That's where the cuts will come in security services, and the cuts have come mostly to patrol.
Yeah, well, okay, my last comment is I'd urge John and the finance committee to ask you to get a quote from a couple of security companies and see what they would charge. And you
thank
can't
you for your comments, sir. Your 3 minutes is up.
Okay.
I had a comment for Frank. Frank,
Marty?
Yes, it's Marty.
Please go ahead, sir.
Frank, I kind of agree with you that we should go with the proposition that's recommended that will pass, and the downside of the $96 level would actually mean cuts to the service that we have already, because our goal is to not use the property taxes to fund security. So I think it needs to be tempered with what the idea of not cutting any services.
Well,
so that's my comment.
All right, let's move on and take another question. Raylan, thank you so much for having another question. I think that it's more appropriate, though, to take, let everybody have one question and then we'll go in for seconds. So Beth, whenever you're ready, ma'am.
Hi, it's Beth Bedaris.
Hi, Beth.
Hi, I do have a couple questions. I do think if the residents had known about the proposed 218, increase of $41 a month, you would probably get different answers from your survey based upon that $41 increase impacting then the proposed 96 or, you know, 171 and 298. My second question or comment, I think what the gentleman was trying to say about the gate being funded, If Measure J is for security and the and funds the gate itself, if you took away the security officers, which I absolutely would not want to happen, but was he trying to say the funds that we collect from Measure J would pay for the gate officers no matter what? Is that what he was trying to say?
Yes, that's based upon how much funds are collected through Measure J and based upon how much it costs to provide gate access staffing and patrol staffing. The gate access, there's more than enough money over the years to, with this slight 2% increase per year, to continue to support the gates. But through our working with our attorney, we understand that if we don't have staffing, if we're short on staff, we can reduce patrol hours, just because that was his determination. Therefore, if we were to make cuts in the services, it would fall into that area. Or, and there's a little talk about there being like a kiosk at one of the gates at night, because between about midnight and 4 or 5 a.m., there's very, very few traffic, very little traffic coming through the visitor lane on the gates. Most people have barcodes, and those who don't need to go to the visitor lane. And if we have to make cuts in the gate staffing, we would have to look at how can we operate a gate remotely from the south gate. We'd have to operate the north gate from the south gate.
Right. I remember hearing that proposal and what you had thought you might do. I would be against that, only because if the rest of the world finds out we're unprotected in those early morning hours or late evenings, you know, who's going to start coming out here and breaking into homes?
I 100% agree with you, and so does the board. And that is why we're dedicating so much of the property taxes towards keeping security at the two gate officers, one patrol officer, 24/7. Literally, we would never have gone without patrol hours had we had staff. But with COVID and with just general staffing issues, we were forced to have some downtime where we didn't have patrol officers on duty. And it's my belief, I know every time that I'm aware of, we don't have patrol, we notify the sheriff, or we make it clear that the sheriff is readily available. But that readily available can be 45 minutes at any given time based upon where the staffing is.
Right, but at least we did have gate officers, you know, not that they're, you know, can do anything, but at least they were there to witness somebody coming in, or, you know, could immediately call for help where the rest of us are asleep.
Correct.
Okay, those are my questions. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Our next question is from John Sullivan. Whenever you're ready, John.
Sorry, I'm unmuted, I guess. Can you hear me?
All right. Yes, we can hear you.
So, Tim, what is the parcel tax that the district has described to you under, is it a 1911 or 1913 or 1915? Or what authority are they using for a parcel tax?
I would pitch that to Tom, because Tom talked with legal counsel.
As best as I know it, John, we have to do a parcel tax, which is equally assessed to every parcel, as opposed to Measure J, which was assessed based upon square footage for commercial, acreage for undeveloped land, and then the residential taxes by parcel. This tax would be equally divided amongst every parcel.
Okay, so let me continue.
Okay.
These are assessments. These are parcel assessments, and they're subject to Prop 218, Section 4, for procedures and requirements for all assessments. Any agency which proposes to levy an assessment shall identify all parcels which will have a special benefit conferred upon them and upon which an assessment will be imposed. The proportional special benefit derived by each individual parcel shall be determined in relationship to the entirety of the capital cost, the maintenance and operating expenses, the cost of property-related services, and their associated relationship to each other. No assessment shall be imposed on any parcel which exceeds the reasonable cost of the proportional special benefit conferred on that parcel. This is right out of Prop 218. And all assessments must be supported by a detailed engineer's report prepared by a registered professional engineer certified by the state of California. You say that you're going to have until August 1st to make a decision, and yet you haven't engaged anybody and told them the precise type of parcel tax you intend to use and how much you're assessing each parcel and doing your engineer's report. How are you going to do that in 4 months?
So if I can just jump in, this is Tim. There is a difference between Prop 218 measures as you've described them, but as a community service district, they're also allowed and authorized to levy special taxes. So there's two, and we see this with cities all the time too. They have multiple different types of taxing mechanisms. If you think of tax word broadly, 218, you have your benefit assessments, and there's different rules that apply to that. You also, as you point out, have to have an engineering firm that would go in and assess exactly the methodology for how you're going to apply the special benefit to these properties. That's a different avenue than what we were testing here, which is a special tax, which would be a parcel tax. And as a community service district, the law allows them to do that too. So you don't have to have assessment engineer.
I beg to differ with you in that every assessment by every special district requires Prop 218 be followed.
Well, Prop 218 talks about having the difference between special taxes, right, and general taxes. It also talks about when you're for water, it's a different way of doing that than it is for, say, fire. Sometimes have Prop 218s where it's only property owners vote, and it's based on their weighted votes based on the amount that's assessed, and it considers the special benefit to that property. But just like cities also do parcel taxes, right? Where it's not like one of those benefit assessments. It's a levy on a particular parcel. It's the same amount. It doesn't consider special benefit. And there's legal avenues to do that as well. In fact, I'm sitting here right now looking at a memorandum that was actually provided by the district by their legal counsel outlining the various taxing authorities that they have.
So this. Which ones did they decide to go with?
I don't know. It's about a 7-page document, and I'm not an attorney.
why has that not been disclosed this close to a decision being made?
I don't know. First of all, there is no decision that's being made. This was simply background work that the attorney said, say, okay, if you're going to do this, can you, like, for example, in the Measure J where they talked about possible that properties outside of the gates are levied a different tax than the properties inside the gate. When the attorney looked at that, they said it has to be flat due to some legal cases that have come up between the time that Measure J was put in place and currently.
So what you're basically saying is that you by having a flat parcel tax across all the parcels in Rancho Murrieta are saying exactly what was said by JQ Public.
Thank you very much, sir. Your time is up. Our next question goes to Laura.
Yes, thank you.
Hi, Laura. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
I'll start in 2 minutes.
I had a question. I thought I heard, I just wanted to clarify that if this was passed for whatever amount that was on the ballot, it would then go up an additional 3% every year. Did I hear that correctly?
That was, Laura, that was an estimate as part of the whole polling thing, the poll that was taken. We've yet to determine what sort of an escalator that we would include. The Measure J tax, obviously the 2% annual escalator limit is why it goes further and further in the red. And we would probably look at what other jurisdictions have done as far as escalating taxes such as this to continue to meet the expenditures. And just for example, with water and sewer under Prop 218, we can raise the fees based upon the cost of providing services. If security itself was in the Prop 218 rules, and because we did a vote, it's outside of that, we'd be able to say, and this is how much you're going to pay for security next year, and that's the way it is. We wouldn't have to get a two-thirds vote. We put it on Prop 218 notice, and you know how that's working. If 50% plus one of the registered households votes against it or protests it, then we have to go back to the drawing board a little bit. So we're not there. You know, there's a lot of unknowns as you kind of hone in on the dollar amount that we think would pass. If we hone in on the level of service and other questions that we need to answer as we get closer to the August 1st deadline, we need to make those decisions. The first direction we received from the board was to determine if there's an appetite within the district, within the residents, to increase how much they pay specifically for security, which is why we hired True North to do this opinion poll.
Okay, another question I have is, how much thought have you put into the new housing? I mean, there's a lot of new housing that is coming, and I know there's an overall across the board concern about reserves I keep hearing. How much of these new properties would take care of the reserves? Has that been talked about?
We have models that we've developed with the proposed rate increases, with the increases in the reserves that we're proposing. New development pays for itself. Supposedly, if there's new sewer lines put in and manholes, and we have to increase the size of the water treatment plant and add other types of infrastructure, that's paid for by new development. And that's currently going on with the development by the North Golf Course. They're having to increase the capacity of the lift station. So we have these models. And at some point, when you have more homes, you might want to have more patrol. And when you have more homes, at some point, you're going to have to look at possibly a third gate because of the heavy traffic that's going to go down Para and out the Lago Gate. And so there's a lot of questions being tossed around, and we're trying to model our analysis to keep up with what we see as the potential reality of new homes being sold. And right now it looks like about 200 new homes might be sold in the next year and a half. And that's through the development on the south, the Riverview development, and the Retreats development on the north. There's another development potentially in the near future, but we've yet to see some real activity there, which is the Residence, which is by Stonehouse Park. And that's another almost 200 homes. And then, of course, all the north development that Mr. Sullivan is working on, that's potentially, you know, more than 600 or 700 homes. But we can't count on that because we have to be able to pay for our staff today, and we have to be able to pay for them next year.
Okay. So I think that, and here's my last comment, as I understand, you know, things are tough all over, and you're trying to meet the demands of what the community needs. But at the same time, because of the extra, you know, fees that we're having to pay for, you know, sewer, water, garbage, and then if this passes on top of that, and then, of course, let's not forget HOA goes up every single year by a certain percentage. The costs are creeping up so much that it's really making it very difficult, especially for some of our families that are on a fixed income. So it's something that I, as a comment, I would just like you to consider that even though there are important things for just security, we as a homeowner have to pay for all of these out of one pocketbook. So that's what I would like to say.
I appreciate your comments. We are very aware of that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comments, Ray Lynn. I have been keeping track of the time, and you have about a minute left on your original 3 minutes. So we would love for you to eat up the rest of your time.
Hey there, I just have a couple questions. So regarding CFD patrol employees, how many patrol security officers do we have right now? that are CSD employees?
Five.
Five, okay. And then how many private security are we using?
Well, let me make that clear. We have five gentlemen who are responsible for patrol, and then we have Kelly, the security supervisor, who is working patrol shifts from a standpoint if he wants to get out there and from a standpoint if there's lack of staff. And currently, Kelly and I talked earlier today, we currently have two of the ABA employees, which, by the way, we've trained about 15 or 20 ABA employees over the past year who then leave, and we have to train new employees, which is a heavy impact on the budget you see right now because of the heavy turnover. But right now, two ABA employees. And Kelly, I know you're on the line. Do we have two working the gates and one working patrol, but that one working patrol's off for like a month, right?
Yeah, he's not mature. We have one person from ABA that's working patrol for us, and we have two part-time people that are working the gates from ABA. That's correct.
Yeah, thank you, Kelly. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, so the total six, you have CSD, but you have an ABA working as well patrol. For the people that are concerned that they don't want to have private security, we already have them working is my point. And then I also wanted to reiterate that Sacramento County Sheriff's Department is the law enforcement agency for Rancho Marietta. So while you hire them as off-duty deputies to patrol the back lakes or what have you, we do get patrol from Sac County Sheriff's Department or office, however they're going these days. But anywho, I have seen them in the area. In fact, when I was collecting signatures on the protest letters just the other day. So we do have that. It's not like something we always have to pay for out of our pocket through CFD, because we are paying in addition to our tax dollars. Am I done?
That's your 3 minutes. Your time is up. Thank you so much. Thank you for your comment.
Shut up. This is costing us money. Shut up.
And so I have some folks coming back for seconds. Let's say your second comment is a minute and a half. We'll cut it in half. So I'm starting the timer. John Sullivan, welcome back to the stage.
Thank you. Just for the question that came up in regard to reserves, development doesn't fund reserves. Development funds improvements to the community's infrastructure. So between the 400 units that are currently being planned in the short run, they will add $6.8 million to CSD's infrastructure construction funds. And the Rancho North project that's in the process with county would add $11.8 million before inflation to those improvements necessary to support the community's water, sewer, drainage improvements. In addition to that, development pays $1,200 per house for security impact fees that were negotiated back in 2014. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Beth?
Yes, one last comment for me. Again, I'm not really for private security, but if we did give them a try and we didn't like them after a couple of years, we prefer how things used to be and have our own regular staff that we were used to. Obviously, we have new people, but would we be able to go back to having CSD staff our security?
Oh. Beth, the answer to that is, of course, if we opted to buy out the retirement of the current employees, which we'd have to do because they have, you know, that's, I have never, and Ted Hart will tell you, he's dealt with the union on a couple occasions in his professional career where he went to places where the union was strong and he was able to change the direction of how they hired people. If we were to eliminate security, we have 13 or 14 security employees who have a pension, and we would have to make their pension whole to the level of years of service and their income that they have, their salary at the time. And that, we believe that number for security, and Paul, I hate to put you on the spot, but isn't that about $1.8 million
Currently, yes, that's pretty close to it.
Okay. So in addition to going to private security and potentially saving some funds, we would have the district would have to pay out their retirement obligation of about $1.8 million. And if we did that, that would be the case. And if then we went with another security firm and the residents wanted to go back, we could do that. It's complicated stuff, but all that's feasible. It just costs money and it needs the will of the voters to make it happen, I guess.
Okay. Yeah. As I said, I'm not really for that, but I just kind of wanted to, you know, get your take on it if we could go back if we tried it out.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Beth, I'm going to lower your hand. John Q. Public, 1 minute, 1.5 minutes. And I think, thank you.
Hey.
I've been instructed that I will limit comments to 2 comments per person. Go ahead.
Tim, am I on? Okay,
yes,
Tim.
Yes, you are.
Okay, Tim, I was wondering if you have any further results. I was interested in maybe what the survey results were inside the gate versus outside the gate. Do you have any of those results?
I don't have that at the moment. In order to do that, I'd have to parse. It's not like that's a precinct boundary. There's no natural boundary in the voter file that separates those. So you'd have to do it on an address by address basis to split them. So I'd have to go through the 678 records and figure out if they're in or out of the gates.
Okay.
Before I could do that. And I have not done that yet.
Okay. But just a follow-up question. You referred to this as a randomized selection. So you didn't specifically determine that, for instance, the Murrieta Villages represented versus Murrieta Gardens 2 versus any place. It was purely random selection. Well, not purely random, but you wanted representative age-wise.
Well, we look at it by age, gender, partisanship, household party type to make sure that the sample matches that. We do also separate by precincts, right? So it's easier in larger communities to know you've got the proper geographic spread because you can look at the rates by precincts or other, you know, like a council district or other things that you have these sub geographies. Rancho Murrieta is a pretty small place and that the inside or outside the gates line is not delineated on the voter file, right? So it would have to be like a street address by street address basis to figure that one out.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Next, I have my friend Galaxy A135G, 1.5 minutes.
Okay. I just have, probably 2 questions, but I'll be real quick. Did I hear that correct, that when new homes are built, they provide money, but it's not for the reserves, but for immediate use? And 2, back to my security thing of not wanting, I'm hearing that you're training people and then they're leaving. And that's the ones that are with the private firm. And that's my biggest concern. I like the continuity of employment. So those are my 2, one's a question, one's a statement.
Well, I'll answer the statement first. Yeah, there's a high turnover in the form of the private security, but we also have high turnover at the district because our wages aren't exactly high. And also there's been a huge impact with, of course, COVID. So, that's everywhere. We're having trouble hiring people and everybody's having trouble hiring people, especially as you get into more skilled positions. And then John did a good job of explaining when development occurs, the developer builds the infrastructure and they pay fees to the district that are restricted towards improving the capital footprint of the district. And he's talking about currently, I believe our inventory of infrastructure is approaching $50 million, $40 or $50 million. And if John's build out goes as planned, that's almost another $20 million with inflation, clearly. by that point in time. So this is, the district is a little city, and you know, without growth, your rates are going to go up every year because it just, you know, there's no growth. And now that there is growth, there's going to be more funds available, but it's still, we're playing a catch-up game with security. With water and sewer, we bill what it costs to run the department and to keep clean water and to keep your sinks draining properly is, that's under Prop 218, we charge what it costs, but security is different.
I understand. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for your comments. I know that Mr. Merchant is trying to unmute. Can you?
I'm good.
There you are. Hi, John.
Do you have more hands? Have we been through twice?
Well, I do have one new hand raised. If you're ready for what I believe will maybe the last comment, Marilyn Hagen.
Sure, go ahead.
Whenever you're ready, Marilyn.
Can you hear me?
We can.
Oh, good. My last name is pronounced Haugen.
Haugen, I'm sorry.
No problem. I have just two thoughts. I'll make it quick. I had suggested, as the country club has been having problems keeping maintaining things and boilers and everything, and I'm using this as an example. I had recommended many times for them to increase, allow or provide some services for all of the residents in Rancho Murrieta for $40 a month. And that would give them $1.320 million more per year. And they haven't discussed it, they kind of ignore it, but that's, they need that money. And so do you. So why can't we just say $40, I believe that's close to what it's supposed to be anyway, the proposal. That's what would be created, 1.340 million or 120,000 a month. Isn't that what we're talking about? Isn't that what it's gonna be? The increase?
Not exactly. You know, Tim tested through the questionnaire, he tested four rates, and the $96 a month, a year rate is, I'm just doing real quick on my phone, is $8 a month. The $298 a year is $25 a month. So that's the range in which he talked about. I've heard a little bit of talk about the country club and the proposal to charge a flat fee to everybody. And that's our highest rate right now. With the highest rate that Tim tested with his poll was $24.83 a month.
Well, I think that's reasonable. And I think it's obvious we need it, because I understand that there's a shortage of $500,000 in the security arena short. So you have a hard time paying the, not only hiring people, but paying the pay they want, because gas is more money and people coming from out of the area will want more money to cover their gas. It's obviously everything is in it being inflated, and the community should understand we have to go along and pay the dues, the increase, because that will keep us up from, you know, worn out things, and which is going to happen. This is a 54-year-old community. And so I think it's just a matter of saying to, I mean, I read a lot of comments on Nextdoor and all these surveys they want to do, or signups on protesting. They have to understand that every place, every community is having the same problem. Inflation on top of older property and unknowns. You have to have that increase passed. And I was suggesting $40 a month. And that's what the country club came up with. It was me pressing them to do that so they could keep the country club going. They're patching up the boilers, but I understand they do have a reserve of $1 million. So, you know, just inform people, get a life. Everything's going up, including where you live. We cannot be excluded from this. This is the way it's going everywhere. That's what I want to convey to everybody that's listening. We haven't any choice. This is what's happening to our world. Thank you for listening. Thank you
so much for your comments, Marilyn. Mm-hmm.
Yes, thank you.
How are we doing there, Amelia?
I have no more hands raised.
Okay, well, first of all, thank you to everyone for the comments. A lot of what we heard is extremely valuable, and you know, as we said, we'll see what the next move is, and we're trying to refine this before we get to the point where we have to pull the trigger. The next item we have is director and staff comments. Anybody in the staff, anything?
Yeah, I just want to say, to begin the meeting, we had 31 participants, and this is really what local government is about. And I appreciate everybody who got online tonight and asked questions and listened. And I encourage you to share what you learned tonight with your fellow residents. It's amazing that this type of a meeting can take place, and appreciate everybody's time.
Marty, anything?
Yeah, I saw Tom's memo. Are you looking for some sort of direction from the committee?
Yes. We need to know if you guys want us to take this forward with a little bit, any sort of tweaking to the board next Wednesday. We put it on the agenda as a placeholder if you want us to do that. And also that direction. So if you want a little bit more information, time to put a little bit more stuff together, what do you want us to take to the board? And then you saw my estimated cost proposal. One of the things that I think is important is that we understand that we need to hire professionals to help us finish this off. Timothy's done a great job. There's been surveys done about security in the past, and I've seen them, and I don't think anything this thorough, this relevant, has been done in recent history, to be able to have a scientific way of producing these types of results and information for the public to see. I sat through most of the working group meetings. The participation was excellent. So what we're looking for as staff is what you, the committee members, would like us to do next.
Tom, would you and Timothy, maybe you can shed some light on this. Are we ready for the marketing segment of this until we resolve some of the issues that we went through tonight? Or if perhaps we want to do more interim testing, and I understand that we might want to do more testing as we get closer and closer to the trigger date in August, but are we at a point where we'd want to, I know just getting one of these firms is really, really difficult. So what's the recommendation? What should we be doing at this point?
So, you know, the filing deadline to place a measure on the November ballot is early August, and which sounds like maybe it's a long way away, but it really isn't, right? It is coming up fast. And between now and then, you know, this poll in a lot of ways is kind of the beginning of the conversation with the community. It certainly shouldn't be the end of the conversation with the community. When we do these, the point is to kind of listen to the community, hear their thoughts, and then, you know, you should sit back, think about your proposal. What do you need to rethink about your proposal, right? That would go on the ballot. And there's sort of two paths here. One is, you know, you need to do the work to actually come up with the legal documents you would need in the resolution to be able to put it on the ballot. But before you do that, you really need to also continue this conversation with the community. And I say it's a conversation because it is two-way, right? It's not just the district talking to residents, it's residents getting to chime in and learn more about this proposal. The challenge is, if you put a measure on the ballot that, and people are surprised to see it, right, that they don't know it's there, they don't know anything about it, you know, that's usually a recipe for failure, right? It's important that between now and the time the board decides as to whether or not you're going to place a measure on the ballot, that there's some more outreach and education that should happen. And through that process, you know, it's organic, it evolves. You'll get a better idea of, okay, exactly what it is you want to put on the ballot and if in fact you want to put something on the ballot. So time is of the essence. I think that if you want to keep the option open for possibly placing a measure on the November ballot, you do need to start widening the discussion with the community. And that's what the Clifford Moss Group does, right? They help you have that conversation with your community in an organized way.
Okay.
With regard to where we should go next, I think that Timothy did a great job on the survey. He gave us a recommendation. I think we need to act on it. And acting on it means what do we want to choose based on his survey? And what can we provide in services for the choice that we made? And and so, yes, the board needs to evaluate that. I'm not in favor of doing more surveys. I think you're never going to get a perfect survey. I think we need to make a decision and go forward. It could be do nothing, could be one of the options that he recommended in the survey, but it's time to make a decision.
And correct me, Tom, if I'm wrong in my thinking here, that even if we were to do what Marty is suggesting, we could still go through with the analysis of the community reaction to privatization based on accumulating an RFP or more information about hiring a private firm. Obviously, you know, if it winds up indicating that maybe that as a cost measure and an acceptance by the community, if that comes to fruition, then we're still parallel to the money. How we wind up spending that money in the end, whether it be private or CSD run, is kind of a parallel issue. Am I right?
You know, I'm thinking while you're talking, John, and I'm thinking, do we want to go through a formal RFP process, which is probably a 3 to 5 month experience? So my first question, you know, it's going to cost us less than $600 to put this on the ballot to the county. But if we were to go to the county in an off period, the county told me it'd be $80,000 to $90,000, because right now we're just three more pages on a 200 page ballot. If we were to do our own thing, they'd have to gear up and do all that. So Tim, what would be the next general election cycle that if we wanted to drag this out a little bit longer, get more information, maybe do a formal RFP, or maybe do some site visits to like Serrano or Granite Bay or other types of, or Brookside and Stockton, Blackhawk, obviously one of the gentlemen used to live in Blackhawk in Danville. If we were to kind of go out and do some of that research, when would be the next for us to like put it on the ballot where it's a reasonable cost? Would it be?
You're talking about regularly scheduled elections. So you're probably looking out at 2024.
Okay. That's what I thought you were going to say. Because there's an election this June, right? But it's not a general election.
Well, basically what you're seeing around the state is they're consolidating to even years, right? So you have a primary election that's either in June or in presidential years is in March, right? Or has been recently. And then you have general elections in November. In your odd years, right, there were and have been some cities that would have their own regular their elections in odd years and things, but what you're seeing now is that there's a lot of consolidation. So if you were to go in an odd year, that's going to be what you were describing as you're going it alone. It's the only thing on the ballot, and that election is going to cost a lot more because the county is basically doing the whole thing just for you.
Timothy, you dropped out there for a second. Could you repeat the last two things you said?
Okay. Am I there back now?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So, you know, the less expensive one, you know, the reason why this upcoming November is less expensive for you is because you're already on ballot. You're just adding a few pages, right? And the cost of running this election, the county is amortizing across all these other measures. When you go out in a special election where you're really the only thing on the ballot, to your point, the county is gearing up and has to do all this just for you. So you get to cover the costs of that. And that's why it's more expensive. I think anything in an odd year is going to essentially be a special election for you, right? And so if you don't go in November of 2022, your next opportunity is probably June of 2024. Actually, probably March of 2024.
Hey, let me expand on this conversation. Let me expand on this, Timothy. You see the lay of the land here. We put out some numbers, 96, 298, and you guys kind of honed in on, like, we think 171 will pass. Between now and August 1st, how much does that dial normally change? And how much, and we can all make our own speculation on how different it's going to be because of the war in Ukraine or COVID. But in general, how much do you see that number fluctuating from 171 up or down? I mean, if we agree to spend the $60,000 to hire a law firm and hire Clifford Moss and whoever would do polling, how often does people go that far into August 1st and say, you know what, we're good, we're not gonna pull the trigger on this?
Well, I mean, we have had agencies that have said, look, this is a good conversation to have with our community regardless, right? That we need to inform them about where we are in our, you know, the financial situation and as it relates to security and what the choices are that we've been facing as a district. And, you know, you could get to late July where you're near the filing deadline. And then, yeah, something dramatic happens and you realize, look, we don't want to go on the ballot in November. And you stand down. You don't put it on the ballot. Does that mean that conversation was not worthwhile? No. I mean, I think it's a good conversation to have either way, because it's your financial situation that you're facing. The idea behind having the conversation with the communities is going to give you a better feel as to whether or not you should put it on the ballot and at what level. It isn't the idea that we're going to go have this conversation with the community and at the end of this, you know, we're going to somehow push their tolerance level to $298 per parcel. I don't see that happening. And if that's not the goal of that discussion, right, it would be to say, let's inform them about, you know, the situation where we're at and that we're considering this measure. Let's talk about the uses of this and make sure that they have all the facts in front of them if we're going to go ahead and put this measure on the ballot. The problem I see right now is just a timing issue, as you mentioned. If it's going to take a matter of several months to be able to come back with an answer related to the cost of security, private security versus doing it yourself, by the time you have that answer in hand, you will have obviously missed the filing deadline for a November measure, right? So
yeah, I think to go out and do a request for quotes, request for information, request for proposal, any of those flavors of getting people to tell us what they think they would charge us, I think we're looking at a minimum of 2 months to get something really valid. We could, but if we wanted to go around and knock on the doors of some of the HOAs like Granite Bay, like Serrano, like I don't know that much more about Sacramento, but I know Brookside and Stockton. We could ask them what they're paying, and we could ask them if they have armed security guards, within their borders doing their thing, and we could get an idea of what they're paying. Ted did a great job getting a couple bids and reviewed them with them, and he very kindly decided, you know, I asked him to stand down until we finished the poll to not make the poll be more confusing, which he did. And I appreciate that, Ted. But if it's the desire of the board for me to go get these then I have to say, okay, if we're going to do that, it's up with our staffing. Right now we have a whole lot of work going on and we don't have a lot of resources, but if we had to do that, we would do that. And we'd be able to kind of get an idea of what people are paying. If we were to do kind of a tertiary assessment of some of these larger country clubs, which is basically what we're talking about, where they have gates, where they have full-time security, that might make a difference. I seriously, when we do salary surveys for Rancho Marietta, they have a very difficult time finding comparative salary structures and benefit structures for security. Because again, the very first thing I said tonight was we're the only public agency in California that's a special district that has our own in-house security staff. And some of our staff have been with us over 30 years. So I don't know, I kind of rambled now and then.
Tom, I'm trying to understand that maybe these are parallel choices. As Marty's suggesting, we have a conversation about what number we want to hang our hat on, understanding that if it's the lower number, or if it goes on the ballot and it fails, it's a discussion that we almost have to have anyway. I mean, if we don't fully fund it out of security tax, and we don't have the resources to fully fund it going forward, then we're not going to leave the gates, the gatehouses vacant. We're going to have to do something. So we're still having this conversation, and maybe privatization is, with that data, is what ultimately provides the solution to just not in the end coming up with enough money.
Well, and John, don't forget, Measure J funds security services for the entire district. You know, while you're paying almost $31 a month right now, the folks in the village and the gardens, they're paying, and Paula, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's $786 a month. But so they're paying for their level of service. If we were to go to private security, that would have to include a different sort of environment than the HOAs that I mentioned, because those HOAs are all behind gates, or they're all within their own scope, and they're all being paid for out of the HOA. And I don't know what all their retirement benefits are, but I'm sure they're not as solid as CalPERS. But it's all part, it's a very complicated process. But I just wanted to remind you that, because as you were talking about that, if we were just talking about behind the gates, it'd probably be, and Richard asked the question, it'd probably be a different result. And if we were just talking behind the gates, then you would say, well, maybe we just give it all back to the RMA. But that's not what Measure J is. And Measure J was approved by the voters, and that's the law in Rancho Marietta.
But I'm still trying to understand, and to Marty's point, do we have the discussion about, well, we can have both discussions and let five people decide. I mean, do we want to, going forward, do we want to have this discussion about, is this the time to hang our hat on a number, or is it the time to have a discussion about the 171 number? And is it also a time to have a discussion about, is this the correct time to bring in the marketing firm?
I was going to ask you if it would be all right with you and Marty if we asked Bonnie Moss to speak as to what they provide. Are you open to that?
Say that I'm you're
on. No, Bonnie Moss is with Clifford and Moss, and they're the company that I think we should hire, or we can just ask Timothy to chime in, because as these things mature over the next 2 to 3 months before August 1st, you know, do we need to decide on a number today, or do we hone in on that number through educational information from what Clifford Moss does for a living? Timothy, I mean, John, are you open to that discussion?
I am. Ask Marty too. Marty, what do you think? What do you want to do?
I think we need to make a decision where we're headed. And then if we make the decision to go forward with a ballot, then bring in this Clifford and see how they can help us. But I don't know, just we got a pretty short time frame here. And kicking it down the road doesn't seem like a good idea to me.
Well, how about if I ask Timothy to chime in on that particular matter? Would that be okay with you, Marty and John?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
So, I think you've got a couple different balls in the air here, right? I think if you want to keep the possibility open for a November 2022 ballot measure, you should certainly get going on communications and outreach, and that's what Clifford Moss is there to help with. You haven't created a measure yet. You haven't, and that's often the way it works, right? That the communication outreach is part of how you as a public agency wind up deciding on whether to do a measure and what it looks like. So that's kind of the purpose of this outreach and education in advance of that point. If this decision were to kick down the road more to the point where, well, you know, you're going to wait a month, by the time you get to that point, you're backed up so close to the time you're ultimately going to have to make a decision that you're just not prepared by the time you get there, right? So, you know, most agencies, if they're going to be considering placing a measure on the November ballot, you know, here we are at April 15th, right? That only gives you about 3 months to get up, you know, get in gear and go out and talk with your community in a more focused way. And so, I mean, I don't know that you've got a lot of room to delay, to be honest. Now, again, that's to have the conversation that then enables you to know, yes, we should or should not put a measure on the ballot, and this is what it's going to look like. You don't have to make all the decisions around what that measure looks like before you go out and communicate. That's sort of putting the cart before the horse.
Well, I think, yeah, I kind of think I'm on board with that way to go. I don't know that I want to go to the meeting on Wednesday and pick a number. I would rather have the flexibility after we get a feeling from the work that the marketing firm would do, that at that point I would have enough information to make an intelligent decision as to whether I pick one level, another level, or no level at all. That's kind of where I am at the moment. And so maybe what we're doing is, and Marty, I need, you know, you can tell me what you think. Maybe we just have that discussion. We could still put it in the form of an action item. And if we get to the point at the meeting where it looks like we have a consensus, we could still act on it any way we wanted to.
I think the board needs to take the information we have right now and decide if we're going to actually put something on the ballot, or and then we have till August to pull it back if we have to. But I think there's a lot of preparation that needs to be done. This Clifford people helping us, the legal people helping us, so there's a lot that needs to be done. If we just can't make a decision Wednesday, I think it's done for till 2024 myself.
Well, and I agree that we have to make a decision to go forward, What I'm asking here is, do we have to make a decision on Wednesday to go forward with one number or another? That, I don't know the answer to that.
And as this, Tim, I just want to jump in here real quick, because we work with agencies that are, you know, thinking about measures all the time. I don't think that Wednesday's meeting is a good point to make a decision about a dollar amount or to commit to any particular phrasing of the measure itself or anything else. I think the decision that has to happen on Wednesday is, yes, we're going to take the next steps towards the idea that we're going to, you know, we're going to keep open the opportunity to place a measure on the November ballot, right? So we're going to start engaging in that preparatory work. And then as for exactly what the dollar amount is and what the wording of the measure is and all those things, that all comes together on the night, ultimately the night that you vote to place a measure on the ballot. That's probably much further down the road, sometime in, you know, late July, early August. So you want to, I think it's too early to make some of the decisions you're asking about, like the dollar amount. I think you'd be much better informed about that closer to the point that you're going to actually decide whether or not to put it on the ballot.
Okay. I buy that. Marty?
I agree that we need to make a decision if we're going to go forward.
Yeah. Okay, good. Cause I agree. Then we, I think we have a reasonably good idea of what we're going to do. Anything else, Tom, that we need to deal with?
No, I think the direction is clear. I'm going to update the memo. Paula and I are working on a couple tables that might help explain the numbers a little bit better. We met today for a couple hours and trying to zero in on some of the numbers as to if we get this much more a month from each customer, at what point do we break even? At what point do we add, you know, 12 hours of patrol services? At what point do we add the extra sheriff's officer services? And believe me, we all pay our taxes from where we live and we pay for the sheriffs to support us. But, you know, I think we're in District 2. Is that what they call it for the sheriff's department? And that encompasses all the way to Rancho or all the way out to Rio Vista.
Right. So
at any given time, I think there's at some points in time in the middle of the night, there's two or one patrol officer patrol car in our district. And, you know, if a call comes in, the sheriff has to hightail it all the way over here. And that is why we spent so much money last summer. And I think it had a heavy impact on security and safety and behavior of our residents as younger folks. That's why we paid so much for the sheriff's, the extra sheriff's officers last year. And, you know, in a perfect world, they'd be here right away all the time, but that's not the case. We're pretty remote. So we're prepared to bring this forward on Wednesday.
Okay, Marty, I think we're in lockstep on this now.
Yeah, I was pleased that we had a lot of people show up. I think it was a wise decision to have it when we did.
Yeah, I don't ever remember having this many people at a committee meeting. Board meeting, yes. Committee meeting, no. Mm-hmm. And it was extremely helpful. Anything further? If not, I'll move on to item 6, which is adjournment.
Oh, that's a hard one.
Yeah. Good night, everyone. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody involved.
All right, bye.